Okay, dear Dharma friends, we have come to the next item of this Mindfulness for Young Adult session. That is a discussion regarding a particular sutta, and nowadays we are discussing Khaggavisana Sutta. Khaggavisana Sutta is available in Sutta Nipata, which is one of the books in the Kuddaka Nikaya, or shorter discourses of the Buddha. And all the verses available in this Khaggavisana Sutta are attributed to the Paccheka Buddhas, Sammasambuddha, Paccheka Buddha, and the Arahant, fully enlightened beings, are the three levels of fully enlightenment according to the Dhamma. And Sammasambuddha is a self-realized person who is capable of explaining Dhamma to the others and are able to establish a sasana. And on the other hand, if we consider the other levels, that is Paccheka Buddha, who too is able to realize Dhamma by himself, but not establish Sangha order, does not establish Sangha order, and therefore, their realization is fairly limited. On the other hand, who are the followers of Sammasambuddha, and depending on their different capacities, they have certain amount of possibility of explaining Dhamma to the others. So in this case, each and every verse is attributed to a Paccheka Buddha, and here actually the Gautama Buddha is explaining the previous stories attributed to each and every verse or each and every Paccheka Buddha. Now we have come to the 72nd verse, which is coming in the whole Sutta Nipata, and it is going like this. Siho yatha data bali pasaiha raja miganam abibhuya chari seveta pantani senasanani eko chare kaggavisana kappu. So what it basically means is siho yatha data bali pasaiha. So you know that king of the beasts or king of the animals is the lion, and one important aspect is his fangs, the sharp teeth that he has, fangs. And because of that, he can kill other animals and eat flesh, and this becomes one of his strength. So like the lion king of beasts, who has fangs as its strength. So this is one of his strength when consider a lion. And seveta pantani senasanani, one should resort to remote belongings, lodgings. So here lion also is somewhat living in a little secluded manner, and on the other hand he is the king of the animals, and he is able to attack and overpower the others using his strong fangs. And therefore this particular verse mentioned, live alone like a rhinoceros horn. So the story behind the verse is very much similar to what we discussed last time. A certain king has recognized a certain lion while he was traveling with his army. Now he is traveling through a forest, and at that time actually he had accompanied many elephants, and he too was on an elephant. And there were many other animals like horses to his army, and they all were going through a forest. And then another one man of his army has noticed a great lion, and after he noticed the lion, he informed that to the king. And then king was thinking about a few previous information he had, that is, a lion is never afraid, And a lion is never being afraid of any sound. So he wanted to check that. So therefore, what happened is, this king ordered his whole army to make strong sounds. So some of them making sounds using their weapons, using their drums, sticks. And therefore, the whole sound become quite strong. But the animal, that is this lion, didn't notice it, doesn't care about it. He's just minding his own business. Didn't care much about this strong sound. Then the king and the army stopped their sound. And king was thoughtful, that this lion is somewhat unshaken. For the second time, he ordered his army and the other people to make huge sound. So again, they started making a huge sound using drums, sticks, etc. And for the second time, the lion is unshaken. King has noticed this. And for the third time, he ordered the army to make a huge sound. Therefore, the using drums and sticks, so they made another louder noise. And this time, lion was thinking, now kind of an enemy has come closer to me. I better attack. So he wake up, raised up, and make a huge roar. And his roar actually frightened whole army, including elephants, horses, and whatever the other animals. So the elephant to which the king has risen up, king's elephant, also was frightened. Typically, other elephants could be frightened, but not the king's elephant. But this time, king's elephant also was frightened to the huge roar of the lion. And while king being on the back, this particular elephant was running through the forest. And all the horses and all the animals, elephants, they also were running throughout the forest, being afraid of the sound of the lion. Now, fortunately, king has found a branch and he just hang on to a branch and he escaped. And all the other army and the elephants, horses, etc., they all were run here and there, ran here and there. Now, fortunately, another incident happened. The place where king stuck is a place several Pacheka Buddhas residing. So at that time, several Pacheka Buddhas were residing in the forest, and to this place, accidentally, this king has come. Now, king was little surprised to see that these Pacheka Buddhas are also unshaken. So they were dwelling very peacefully, and king has noticed that. And he want to check it, and he is asking a question from the Pacheka Buddhas. Bante, did you notice any sound? Then they are answering, yes, great king. So we have noticed several sounds. And king wants to verify them. What are the sounds that you heard? Then the Pacheka Buddhas were answering, first we heard a huge sound from drums. Then it stopped. And for the second time we heard drum sound. Again it stopped. And then we heard a sound of a lion. That also they have noticed, they have heard. And then king was asking a question, Bante, didn't you get afraid? Didn't you get frightened after hearing lion's roar? Then the Pacheka Buddhas were mentioning that we didn't. We were not frightened because of the lion's roar. Then king was quite surprised and appreciating that capacity, and he was sort of pleading, can you tell me the way to your own realization, which is capable of not being afraid of even a lion's roar? Then the Pacheka Buddhas agreed, and they asked king also to go forth, to give up the kingdom and become a monk. And King agreed, and he was continuing that. And he became a monk, and he started to practice. And with less time, he was able to become a Paccheka Buddha. And after becoming a Paccheka Buddha, he uttered this joyful verse, joyful utterance. That is how this particular verse has come to effect. Siho yata datha bali pasaiha raja miganam abibhuya chari. So like the king of beasts, king of the animals, the king, the lion, is overpowering and attacking the other animals using particularly his fangs. Seveta pantani senasanani. One may live, associate certain dwelling places like a rhinoceros horn. Eko chare kagga visana kappu. So this is very much the information given in the commentary and the verse. So basically we can understand some sort of solitude is emphasized. And on the other thing is, if we compare the power of the animal, this king, the lion, and the power of the Paccheka Buddha, we can get another idea. That is, the lion has his fangs, which has become its power. But on the other hand, Paccheka Buddhas have wisdom that has become their power. So they are very much enlightened beings and fully enlightened, and they have great wisdom. Because of that great wisdom, they are shining in the whole world. So their strength is the wisdom. And I thought of taking the other verse also today, because this previous verse is quite short. And let's move to the other verse. It is going like this. Ekang karunang vimuttin asevamano muditancha kali sabbena lokena aviruddhamano eko chare kagga visana kappu. So it is going like this. It mentions mettang upekkhang karunang vimuttin asevamano muditancha kali. Now, this is easy to understand. So, these are the four Brahma Viharas. Metta, Mudita, Karuna, Upekha. So, those four Brahma Viharas. Aseva Mano means associate in the proper time. At the right time, pursuing liberation by loving kindness, equanimity, compassion, and altruistic joy. Now, you know, typical, it is not just the typical developing metta, mudita, karuna, upekkha, but it has come to a very long, higher strength, higher level. That is the metta cheto vimutti, karuna cheto vimutti, mudita cheto vimutti, and karuna cheto vimutti. Now, taking one level or taking loving kindness towards the cheto vimutti level requires fair amount of practice. Now, if you simply say, may you be well, may you be happy, may you be free from suffering, may you be free from suffering again and again. So likewise, you can spread metta. And for yourself also, you can spread metta. May I be well, may I be happy, may I be free from suffering. Likewise, you can spread metta. Such a short term, short phrase you can use to develop metta, spread metta. And that is not sufficient to reach the liberation of loving kindness. So, this liberation of loving kindness is far more, far great achievement in one's meditation. So, that requires a fair amount of practice. Actually, how one starts achieving loving kindness is very simple. But moving forward, he or she has to enhance it, propagate it, develop it more and more. So, if I brief how one would do it, say you are, first of all, probably you are developing loving kindness towards yourself, and then you are taking a respected person of the same sex, and to him or her that you are spreading metta. May he be well, may he be happy, may he be free from suffering. So likewise again and again, so you are developing metta. And you take another respectful person, So likewise, you are developing this skill more and more. Now you may take another person who is dear to you and you spread metta. That is also not impossible now. You can do it easily because you have developed certain amount of skill using a respected person. But the interesting point here is that we are not immediately going for the likable persons, lovable persons, because sometimes what happens is, as we develop metta, there could be an attachment. But if we take a respectable person that we honor, we respect, there is no such kind of an attachment. Rather, what we have is simply respect. So easily we can develop loving kindness without getting attached, without overwhelming emotionally. So we can maintain that equanimous attitude, but with loving kindness. So one is developing loving kindness towards a respectful first person, maintaining the equilibrium of the mind. So now he understands the quality of loving kindness and the boundaries, not going towards the object, not going towards that person, not getting into any emotions, rather just maintaining very soft loving kindness. So when one learns that quality, even towards a desirable person, a lovable person, one can develop loving kindness without getting attached, without being attracted, without having any unnecessary desires. So you can develop loving kindness. Now, once you further develop, now you can take a kind of a person who is neutral. Even to that neutral person, you can develop loving kindness. You don't have any particular attachment or any ill will. Rather, you have loving kindness to this neutral person. Say a person that you have saw in the market, you have seen in the train. So you don't have any such relationship. You just develop mindfulness or rather loving kindness. Then you can even select someone you don't like. Even to that person, now you can develop loving kindness. Because you know the quality of loving kindness and you can take your mind to that level. Now basically, in terms of the persons, now we are able to penetrate. So to any person, now you can develop loving kindness. Now actually, we need to enhance this skill to different groups and different directions. Now, different directions in the sense, assume that you are taking all different people, all different beings in your front direction. To your front direction, now you are spreading metta. All the beings in the front direction, may all they be well, all they be happy, may all they be free from suffering. So you are now expanding your loving kindness, spreading your loving kindness, pervading your loving kindness towards the front direction. Now you take your right direction. All the beings in your right direction may be well, may be happy, may be free from suffering. So you are spreading metta, all the beings into your right direction. And to your behind direction, all the beings in behind, be well, be happy, be free from suffering. All the beings into your left direction, may all those beings be well, be happy, be free from suffering. All the beings in the upper direction, may all beings be well, happy, free from suffering. All the beings in the lower direction, be well, be happy, be free from suffering. So likewise, now you are spreading metta through to all the directions. Now actually, our mind has this extraordinary capacity that it can comprehend this whole three-dimensional universe. Actually, unfortunately, we are hindering our mind. Typically, we hinder our mind, narrow down our mind only to a very limited group of people, only to a very limited small object, only to a particular person, only to a particular thing. But the mind has the capacity to grow unlimited, to comprehend the whole universe, to spread metta towards the whole universe. So that is what we are here, we are training. We systematically do it You take one direction and then take another adjacent direction, take the other adjacent direction, other adjacent direction. So you are able to now spread metta to a completely horizontally to all the direction. Now one thing is missing, that is the upper direction and the below direction. So you spread metta to the whole upper direction and to the lower direction. Now very much like you are spreading metta towards the whole universe. Very much like the sun. Like the sun spreading sun rays, light towards all the directions. Now your mind has become some sort of a source of loving kindness, spreading metta towards the whole universe. Now this achievement is what we call as Sima Sambheda, and ultimately it is called as the Metta Cheto Vimutti, where all the boundaries of the mind were broken. Now mind become boundless, no boundaries. And again, since we are able to spread metta towards all the beings, there is no any kind of particular group that we are targeting, rather everyone, every being. It may be animals, it may be humans, it may be celestial beings, it may be Brahmas, whoever. We can think of all the beings in the whole universe, now you can spread metta. So all the boundaries, limitations, all were gone. Now your mind become limitless, boundless. So therefore, Metta Cheto Vimutti, one of a very interesting, very profound experience that one can gain in one's spiritual life. And when one has achieved that, so there's a huge amount of, kind of a blossoming in the mind to understand that how much capacity we have and what a powerful experience it is. And you may even experience it even out of the meditation. So if you are able to spend, say, 15 minutes, 20 minutes in that boundless loving kindness, freedom, liberation, even after emerge from that, sometimes several hours, such a blissful state may remain in the mind and you may not get any angry thoughts for a long time. So likewise, very powerful effect is available in this loving kindness meditation when it is developed to the level of Cheto Vimutti. And therefore Buddha mentioned 11 anisansa, 11 benefits of this loving kindness meditation. Very much like sukam supati sukam patibunjati na papakam supinam passati. That means you are able to lie down or you sleep very well, and you are able to wake up very well. There are no bad dreams, fearful dreams happening at night. And manussanam piyo hoti, you become likable to the others, other human beings. Amanussanam piyo hoti, even you become likable to the other inhumans. Then devata rakkanti, the celestial beings start to protect you. Then your face become beautiful. Then you won't be harmed by poison weapons because you have this strength or the power of loving kindness. And Buddha mentioned, if you couldn't achieve Maggapala in this very life, and again if able to develop loving kindness and to maintain loving kindness to this level, then you will be definitely reborn in the Brahma realm. So likewise, 11 benefits are mentioned in Mettanisansa Sutta to this loving kindness. Now, not only loving kindness, Buddha mentioned such benefits are there even for the compassion. Karuna, Karuna Cheto Vimutti. When you understand that someone is in a trouble, in a difficult situation, so you get a kind of a empathy in your heart. So you feel that he's suffering and you want to help the other person. So that is the compassion. Loving kindness is kind of a friendly attitude towards everyone, expecting their well-being. So that is the loving kindness. And so at that situation, people may be in their normal life, normal situation, but in the compassion. So that is where the other being is in a suffering situation, in a, when compared to yourself, he is in a kind of a trouble. So to that troubled person, suffering person, you have great compassion. On the other hand, mudita is another interesting quality where we have altruistic joy. So you can be joyful about someone else's success. Typically what happens is one becomes jealousy about someone else's success. So that is the typical nature of our mind. Say someone has become rich, and probably you even criticize that he has become rich because of these wrongdoings, and you couldn't appreciate his say growth or his wealth or his success. Or if someone has say succeeded in another thing, maybe has got a promotion, probably because of his skills, probably we can become jealous about him, or even criticize, or even condemn. But on the other hand, when someone develops altruistic joy, the opposite is there. When someone else is successful, you can even be happy by seeing that other person's success. So this is a very rare in the way, because people, you compete each other, look down the others, and criticize others, condemn others, and to become kind of jealous of the others. So this is the typical way of human mind. But on the other hand, if we are able to develop altruistic joy, mudita, there we are going to a very interesting, very powerful, and very opening state of mind. With the other's success, you can be happy. Actually, that person who is capable of being happy of another person's success is living very joyfully. Because you know, if you are being happy only because of your own success, so you can't be successful every day. You can't be successful every time. There are always ups and downs in our life. Therefore, our success is very limited. Time to time, of course, we can become successful, but not always. But on the other hand, when we consider the other people, there are many people that we may associate, we dealing with, and most of the time, some of them may become successful. And if we are able to be happy, maintaining some appreciation, developing some appreciative joy about their success, then there are many opportunities for us to become joyful. Because every day someone is successful, every day someone is developing, every day someone is developing maybe spiritually. So we can appreciate that. We can develop happiness towards that. And this success is not just merely material success, even spiritual success. Say someone else is also developing vipassana, someone else is developing metta, has developed to the level of freedom of metta, that is metta cheto vimutti, or someone has developed fair amount of vipassana. By seeing their effort, by seeing their success, so one can, and hearing their success, you can be joyful. So therefore, maintaining such kind of an attitude in oneself is very useful, because at that time there is no even a sign of depression, because we can always be happy. It's a reason to be glad. As mentioned in the Pollyanna book, there is always a reason to be glad, because another person is enjoying. Even though now probably I am going through a difficult time, due to good fortune, another person may be enjoying, may be spending a good life. Rather than being jealous of that person, we can become joyful. So that is a very challenging in a way, if we consider it, because typically our mind start to become jealous about the other person. But if we develop our mind to the level to appreciate another person's joy, appreciate another person's happiness, their success, then we ourselves can be joyful. And on the other hand, the equanimity, on the other hand, talks about a different quality, where you accept that every being is depending fair amount of their own karma. So there are situations that they may go through success, and there are other situations they also face kind of a downfall, there's a considerable impact coming through the karma. And you accept that karma. In a way, this is we are having fair amount of samadhi, correct view, accepting that there are many situations, or there are many causes making someone is successful or making someone into a particular situation. It's not just one thing. So recognizing all these different possibilities, and one can become little equanimous rather than sort of overwhelming with happiness or being depressed with unhappiness. So you are maintaining a fairly balanced mind, equanimous mind, recognizing that everyone has a fair impact coming through their own karma. So that is where the equanimity is developed. Now with that, I like to conclude today's Dhamma sermon. And actually we have only two more verses to discuss on this sutta. Fairly we have come to the end of the sutta. So with that note, I like to conclude today's Dhamma sermon. Now I like to open the session for questions.
Asanai Bhante, there are currently...
Chamila, can you talk a little louder?
Can you hear now?
Yes, yes.
Okay. There are currently 6 questions I answer, and I will start with the practice questions. This is on mindful sitting. Dear Bhante, sometimes when I just sit, relax and try to be mindful on everything without focusing on any object, I start hearing the high pitch resonation sound. I can focus on this and stay with it and listen to other sounds as well. If I hear this high pitch resonating sound and stay with it, can I assume that I am mindful here and now? With metta, that's the end of the question.
Yeah, sure, of course. So actually this resonating sound is what we typically call as the sound of silence. And it's a kind of an indication that we are able to overcome the dwelling in the past or thinking about the past, and having very tense mind, or maybe thinking about the future and having a kind of a tense mind. But right now our mind is relaxed. So this relaxed mind still has kind of an echo available in the mind. So that we call as sound of silence. So we can simply dwell there. I mean, we can't use it as a meditation object. We can simply be there. And actually, for the person who first recognize it, it appears like a little bit of a noise. But with time, it will disappear. So you don't need to much worry about it, how to overcome that. So it will slowly disappear. And on the other hand, as a temporary solution, what you can do is you can spend more time in walking meditation rather than sitting. Because in walking meditation, we are keeping our eyes open and we are developing a fair amount of an open awareness. It's a very natural type of development. And in such situation, because of high amount of mindfulness, the intensity of this what we call the sound of silence may be less. The sound of silence may be a little less noisy. So therefore, you can overcome the impact of that while in the walking meditation. But on the other hand, if you are sitting in a very silent environment with nobody, with no any other sound, and once you reach this sound of silence, it could be a little disturbing even. Because you hear it as an echo. So, by the way, we have to bear with it, and slowly it will disappear. And on the other hand, you can always come back to your posture, come back to your sensations available in the body, and you can put more attention to those sensations, because those sensations are more real than the sound of silence. Say, for example, if you have a kind of a knee pain while you are sitting, and at the same time you hear the sound of silence, so you can pay more attention to the knee pain than sound of silence. Then actually we are more into the Vedananupassana, recognizing what is going on at your knee and trying to understand it, observe it, And that is more useful, that is more fruitful than just being in the sound of silence. Yeah. Your mic muted. Right.
Question number 2 of 6. Dear Bhante, yeah. my primary object is inhalation and exhalation. I am about to set focus inside my body and sense this breathing for about 3 in and out breaths, and then mind tends to wander to something outside the body. I am aware mind wandering, and I am aware it wanders to a thought. Then I need to keep reminding it to come back to breath. At times it like to come back to breath, and at times there is less tendency to come. Yet it comes because I order it to do so. Your advice is much appreciated to proceed further in the practice. Much merits with metta. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, so actually it depends on your state of meditation. So actually it is not a must to come back to breath if you are able to handle the thought. Now that is where we do Chitta Anupassana. Probably you do a little bit of Anapanasati at the beginning, and later you can switch to observe the mind, because you have gone through fair amount of Kaya Anupassana and have developed fair amount of mindfulness, concentration, clear comprehension. Now you can observe the mind. What are the thoughts arising in the mind? Maybe lustful thoughts, maybe thoughts of ill will, jealousy thoughts, different thoughts are coming and going. But you are in the mindful space. So you are dwelling in the mindful space, and you can recognize different thoughts are coming and going. Now you don't need to return back to the breath. Now you are in another realm of mindfulness, where you are observing thoughts as a different person, as an outsider. Like, say different clouds are appearing in the sky, and I am observing them. They don't disturb me, and they don't even disturb the sky. Sky is not disturbed, but clouds come and go. So you can try this. But if your mindfulness is weaker, only risk is that you will be driven by these thoughts. Actually, sometime in our meditation, you have to take this risk and see whether I would be able to handle these different thoughts. And sometimes actually it is becoming successful and you are able to handle them. And therefore, it is not a must always to be with the breath, because you are able to explore other areas as well. Maybe Vedana Anupassana, Vichitta Anupassana, maybe Dhamma Anupassana. So different areas are available for your exploration, your investigation. And actually we are using breath as a primary object to develop a fair amount of wisdom and concentration. And once that wisdom and concentration is available, mindfulness is available, you can try whether you can handle these different thoughts. And therefore, it's not a must to return to the breath. On the other hand, if you are feeling that again my mind is going through thinking, going to the past and thinking, going to the future and thinking, that indicates still the mindfulness is not strong enough to handle this kind of a situation. Then of course you need to return back to the breath. Yeah.
Question number 3 of 6. During mindful sitting, I start focusing on the breath, and after some times it fades away, and I keep on observing the empty space or any bodily sensations which comes prominent. Last few months, after about 30 minutes, I started feeling that my left leg is becoming numb. I can endure it for another 15 to 20 minutes, and by the time I stop, the leg is completely numb. Feeling just pins and needles, which becomes okay after about 5 minutes of keeping the leg stretched. I try to overcome this situation by slightly moving the weight onto my buttocks to the right. It might be due to a blood vessel getting blocked, as I can feel the warm blood slowly going to the left leg, easing off the numbness. I have been doing this adjustment for several sessions now, and always after the breath fades away. I can be mindful on the slow movement of the center of weight of the body moving. Gushing of warm blood to the leg, easing of numbness starting from the upper leg, the different feelings of when the numbness ease off, etc. Therefore, I think I am mindful during this adjustment. My mindfulness is intact during this time and I can return back to the empty space afterwards without any effort and focus on anything around. However, I don't know if this becomes a habit, if it will be a distraction for long period of sitting. Example, continuous 1 hour. Much merit for Bhante's advice. With metta. That's the end of the question.
Could you explain again what would be the habit that he is referring in the question at the last statement? He's worried about something is becoming a habit.
Yeah, my mind is intact during this time and I can return back to the empty space afterwards without any effort and focus on anything around. However, I don't know if this becomes a habit.
Yeah, actually, it is all right. Actually, basically, as I understand the question, so you're asking, sorry?
Yes, but I think he's referring to making the movement.
Yeah, returning back to the emptiness. Is it?
I think it's adjusting the body. Adjusting the body. I think the habit he's referring to is adjusting the body without staying in the same posture. Maybe he can
Right. So basically, adjusting your body without enduring the posture is all right. Because it is necessary to have a comfortable posture. But with time, sometimes we need to adjust the posture because it is generating some amount of pain. Actually, very strong patient endurance is not the path here. Here, actually, we need to have a comfortable posture. The body has to give it support to our meditation. Therefore, if you are capable of maintaining your posture, say about 30 minutes, 45 minutes, definitely after that, if you like to change your posture, it's all right. Because fair amount of support is necessary for the growth of concentration. The body has to be relaxed. Body should not make any kind of a trouble by having a strong pain. So that situation, adjustments are all right. And on the other hand, we need to see when you are continuing your practice, so the support coming from the body become more and more. Say for example, now you are able to maintain the same posture for 15 minutes. Maybe after 1 month, you can go for 30 minutes and you can spend at a stretch on the same posture for 30 minutes because body has become quite seasoned for the sitting posture. And maybe after another 1 month, probably it can handle 45 minutes because it is now you are continuously doing your practice, maintaining that posture. So your body start to give more support. So likewise, the bodily support is important. Maintaining a comfortable posture is important. And it is growing. And you can handle the situation as it is, as it happens, so as it comes your way. So therefore you don't need to worry about changing the posture and it becoming a habit or something like that. Depending on the situation, you are doing some amount of an adjustment.
Question number 4 of 6. This is a general question. Venerable sir, after practicing a reasonable amount of time, a few years, I can say that the walking practice and the method you teach is highly effective and practical to develop mindfulness. Just want to know if there are any references to this walking practice in the suttas. Since it is so valuable and effective even today, others must have done in the past and recorded the results. Can one attain the final realization by predominantly practicing walking mindfulness? That's the end of the question.
Yeah, actually, it can be. So, actually, one important sutta is available in the Anguttara Nikaya, Numerical Discourses of the Buddha, and it is called Chankamanani Sansa Sutta. I can write you on the chat, you can check it. Chankamanani Sansa Sutta. And it mentioned that Buddha is actually explaining Chankama Nani Sansa. Buddha explains five benefits of the walking meditation. That is starting with Adhana Kamo Hoti. So you know, during the Buddha's time, there was no any transport method like today what we have. So what if they want to go to a long distance, they have to walk most of the time. For a person who is developing walking meditation, for going for long distance is not a big deal. So therefore, one obvious benefit Buddha mentioned as the first benefit is the Adhana Kamo Hoti, where you can travel long distance without any trouble. Then the second one Buddha mentioned is Padhana Kamo Hoti. So you are developing walking meditation in a little challenging environment, because unlike the sitting meditation where you are coming to a very closed, quite controlled environment with less sound and no noise, and maybe with closed your eyes, so it's a kind of an artificial controlled environment. But on the other hand, when you do walking meditation, there may be other people also walking, there may be other disturbing sounds, and your eyes are also open. At the same time, you have to pay attention to the sensations that you are gaining, experiencing at your foot. So it's a little challenging at the beginning. So with these things, you are developing walking meditation. So ultimately, when you are becoming more and more successful in this meditation, you can handle any challenge. So the challenges become kind of a skill. Handling challenges become one of the skills of the meditator. So therefore, Buddha mentioned Padhana Kamo Hoti. So you are capable of handling any difficult situation, and you are capable of enduring any difficult situation, and you can continue a practice till you reach the final goal. Because you have never given up your meditation. You have never given up your walking meditation because of the challenges. You have become successful through going through those challenges. That indicates a fair amount of strength, maturity, endurance in yourself. So therefore, Buddha mentioned as a benefit of walking meditation, Padhana Kamo Hoti. And then Buddha mentioned Asite Pite Kaite Saite Samma Parinamang Gacchati. That means what you ate, what you drank, become easily digestible. You know, this is a kind of a metabolism happen properly, and therefore your digestion system works properly, and that is the other benefit Buddha mentioned. And since these are properly handling now, Buddha mentioned appabado hoti as the fourth benefit. Yourself become more healthy, your body become more healthy. That is the fourth benefit. And the last benefit and the most important benefit Buddha mentioned is chankamadi gato samadhi chirattitiko hoti. The strength of the concentration you developed, or the concentration that you develop through walking meditation, is long lasting. It does not disturb, or it does not get disturbed because of small sounds or sights or any other disturbance. You can maintain inner composure, collectedness, mindfulness, or the concentration that you gain through walking meditation for a long time, even amidst other difficult situations. So this is the most important benefit Buddha mentioned as the fifth benefit in the mindful walking. So this is mentioned in the Chankamana Nisansa Sutta of Anguttara Nikaya Panchaka Nipata, the fifth factored numerical discourse. And the other point is, there are several other suttas, like where Buddha mentioned how one needs to cleanse one's mind from various defilements. So there Buddha mentioned in the morning time, so you develop or you cleanse your mind with various defilements by walking, by sitting. And these two postures are highlighted. And in the afternoon, also Buddha mentioned, okay, you do walking and sitting and you cleanse your mind with defilements, with nivaranas. And in the evening, also Buddha mentioned, okay, at night also Buddha mentioned, okay, sitting, walking, you do cleansing of defilement. So likewise, there are the chankamane nisinne avaraniyehi dammehi chittam parisodehi. While in the walking, while in the sitting, so you are cleansing your mind from various hindrances. Avaraniyehi dammehi, that means the hindrances, the nivarana. So you are noticing different defilements appearing in your mind while in the walking, while in the walking meditation, while in the sitting, sitting meditation. Chankamehi sit nisinnehi. So there Buddha has indicated about the walking meditation. So actually it is not a new method, it's a very ancient method. And if you notice ancient Sri Lankan sculpture, now if you have noticed the Galvihara of Polonnaruwa, so that's a very beautiful sculpture, statue of the Buddha. Yeah, he is keeping his hands in the locked position. Like how I'm keeping right now. I think you can't see it. So there, what Buddha indicated is in a very relaxed position. Not in the sitting posture, not in the lying down posture. But with a pleasant smile, he's just keeping his hands on top of the other with a very relaxed posture. So that is where he has come to the end of the walking path, and he is now taking a kind of a soft turning. So just before the taking first, the soft turning, so he is having a pleasant mind. So I probably can show you that. I tried to get that picture from the internet and show you. By the way, so if you consider ancient Sri Lankan monasteries, and there are many walking paths being developed or constructed using even the stones, using granite. So there you can see how much is a what you call this, how much strong tradition it is having. And okay, I found it. Give me a second, whether I can show it to you. Let me see. I can share it with you. Yeah, this is the one I am referring. So you can see the Buddha statue is little different from the other Buddha statues. Hope you can see it. Chamila, can you see it?
We can see it, Bhante.
Okay, good. So basically, in this Buddha statue, it is not the typical, typical sitting or lying down, but this is in a different, very relaxed position. So, and what you see here in this, the bottom part under the foot is not the typical Sandakata Pahana, typical that what you call that curved half moon. But here is the end of the Chankamana, end of the walking path. Because of walking, there's a kind of a curvature has developed again and again, repeated walking. So that is indicated there. There are no any other carvings into this, foot, because it is not the Sandakata Pahana, typical the moonstone. Rather, it is simply the end of the walking path. So if you see the face of the Buddha, I don't have the very close-up image here, it is very relaxed. And his hands are also in a very relaxed posture. And it's a very comfortable, very relaxed posture. And this is actually the walking meditation indicated. Okay, I think that is enough for this question, and we can move forward to the other question.
Excuse me, Bhante, just before you close that. Yeah. You can see the bottom part of that picture. Is it possible to zoom out?
Yeah, give me a second. We'll see. A bit difficult, it seems.
I can see a little bit now of the legs. but just can't see the bottom.
Yeah. Can you now?
Nah, not really. But what we can do is we can send that out as a, we'll find that picture and we'll put it in the chat so people can have a look.
I can put it onto the, now can you see?
If you scroll down a little bit more, I think we'll see the light.
Okay.
Yeah, now we can see. Okay.
Yeah. So actually, this part is not the typical moonstone, but it's a simply showing a flat stone without any kind of decorations, indicating it's the typical, I mean, it is the end of the walking path where Buddha has come through walking meditation and now he is taking the turn at the edge, at the end. So this is a very interesting example of walking meditation indicated by the very ancient sculptures. Okay.
Abhisai Bhante, question number 5 of 7, I think. General question. Dear Venerable Bhante, where or which book can I find information about previous Sammasambuddha with metta? That's the end of the question.
There is a book called Buddha Vansa. I think it is in the Kuddaka Nikaya. And there are the ancient histories and what they have done in order to become Buddhas. And all such information are available. So there are other such books available. I'll give you the exact reference soon. I exactly can't remember into which Nikaya it belongs to. Buddha Vansa Pali. So that actually belongs to the the Kuddaka Nikaya. And it has some information about different Buddhas, and you can refer that. And actually, this refers to our Buddha as well as various other Buddhas. At least the 28 Buddhas that we have heard of, information is included in this Buddha Vansa, which is coming in the Kuddaka Nikaya, shorter discourses of the Buddha.
Sorry, Bhante, we have two more questions. Do we have time to go a little bit over time today?
Okay. Yeah.
Question number 6 of 7, general question. Dear Bhante, thank you for this valuable program, which immensely helped us to understand mindfulness and build a practice. After practicing walking and sitting 1 hour, I feel calm, relaxed and refreshed. However, I noticed that I started forgetting some day-to-day routine things I usually recall without any effort in the past. Is this something normal when one starts practicing mindfulness regularly with metta? That's the end of the question.
Yes, it can be, because you become more sensitive, and even though you are sensitive enough and more sensitive, you still can't handle, you don't have much wisdom at the moment to handle them, because that wisdom is yet come. Development of mindfulness is one stage, and as you are continuing, you get fair amount of concentration, and with that concentration, you need to develop vipassana. And that actually helps to handle these difficult situations as well. Because then you are based on a very strong wisdom foundation. And you have many answers to the difficulties or whatever the obstacles which come on your way to handle them. But at the moment, sensitivity has developed because of mindfulness practice. But other skills are not able to, we need to handle it for the time, we need to little bear it for the time being. But on the other hand, you can take some temporary solutions that are helpful, broad information or broad knowledge from the Buddha you can use. But to have your own wisdom, actually you need to have a fair amount of practice. It will take some time.
Question number 7 of 8. This is a general question. Venerable Bhante, does metta meditation have any place in this practice? And if so, can you please briefly outline what it is? That's it.
I mean, you are asking the mindfulness practice, or?
They want to know about metta meditation.
Yeah, actually, I explained about development of metta in our sermon today. So mindfulness practice also can consider as a way of developing metta, because we become more mindful about ourselves. So we start to care about ourselves. We start to have a fair amount of self-awareness, so that we are not allowing mind to become vulnerable or go through any kind of transgressions. So in a way, we are taking care of ourselves. So more we take care of ourselves is a way of developing metta towards ourselves. It is not just you wish well-being towards yourself, rather you develop necessary skills to maintain that well-being. Just wishing well-being to yourself does not give the real benefit, and you don't know how to handle it. But rather, when developing mindfulness, you have certain toolkit to handle it, to develop well-being, to maintain well-being to yourself. And on the other hand, as you develop mindfulness, you can feel someone else's feelings through you, through their behavior, through their facial expressions. Then you can understand, okay, the other person also has same kind of situation, same kind of difficulties. So that is sometimes what we call as the emotional literacy. Yeah, you are able to understand someone else's feelings and empathy. So that is a part of mindfulness practice. So that actually is part of loving kindness as well, because not just wishing him well, but you can recognize his own his emotions. You can recognize his situation, and you can understand what is the situation he is going through, and you can look at his situation from his angle, not just from your angle, but from his angle. That is the empathy, part of empathy. So this is actually helpful. So therefore, mindfulness practice is one practical way of developing loving kindness. We can therefore say like that. And on the other hand, when we come to vipassana, so going through mindfulness practice, developing some amount of concentration and doing vipassana is one common approach. On the other hand, you can use loving kindness, develop loving kindness further and develop to the level of freedom level, and you can use that as a foundation, that as the base to your vipassana practice. So different approaches are available. So loving kindness therefore certainly has a place.
Question number eight, this is the last one. This is a bit of an odd question, Bhante. The person hasn't said who they are. Anyway, I'll read it out. The material that I get from you recently by WhatsApp, can I share with friends of Dhamma? If so, can they open the material found therein, or is it only for my information? In the meantime, we'll get willing participants and inform you from direct circulation to them. Appreciate your services towards spread of Dhamma. That's the end of the question. I don't know who it is.
Yeah, I can't remember what is the material that you are referring. Actually, if I have shared some Dhamma material, I mean, you are free to share with others. I don't know what you are referring by the way that I have shared with you.
Yeah, maybe that person, because they obviously have you on WhatsApp, they can just send you a message. Yeah, anyway.
Yes. Yeah. Please send me a WhatsApp message, then I can let you know, I mean, whether to share it or not.
That ends the questions for today, Bhante. We've gone over time, so I'll wrap up very quickly. First of all, I'd like to thank you for giving up your valuable time, and to also pass on all this wisdom to us to help us with our journey. Secondly, to the people seen and unseen, helping to make this happen, and also those that are participating that you may not see. And lastly, to all the participants, because without you, we could not continue. So with that, I'd like to end the program. Theruvan Sarnai.
Yeah, Theruvan Sarnai.